Hi, good afternoon, everyone. This is Rajiv S. Khanna for immigration.com, Law Office of Rajiv S. Khanna, PC. Today is January 6th, 2011, Thursday. This is a community conference call, which we provide every other Thursday. Just by participating in this call, we do not establish an attorney-client relationship of any kind. You are not obliged to hire us, nor are we obliged to represent you in any manner. This call is being recorded, and it will be publicly available. So if anybody does not want their voice to be recorded, they should hang up. I strongly recommend you keep your identities confidential, because this call will be heard by many, many people. So just make up a name. If we talk and you end up talking with me, just make up a name. That said, let me get started. Just one second. Okay, so we are starting with the questions that have been posted by members of our community already. I'm reading question number, I guess, one. It's number two because number one is Monica's posting. Number two question is from Singh SS. Completed 6 years of H-1B in Jan 2010, then changed to F-1 to pursue MBA. Meanwhile, employer continued green card process. I-140 has been approved. Green card sponsoring employer wants to hire me by filing change of status to H-1. My question is around CPT, curricular practical training, which I took during MBA, and its impact on planned H-1. There is no impact, Mr. Singh or Ms. Singh. You shouldn't worry about that. The CPT is perfectly okay. It should not interfere with your H-1. I'm a little surprised that you got your change of status to F-1 while the green card process was going on. Maybe you filed the change of status before the I-140 was filed. Typically, even when you try to do a change of status to F-1 with a green card process going, it's often problematic. Okay? However, that's not your question. Let me get back to your question. CPT is not a problem. Now, you are also, I think, planning to do an EB-2 filing from EB-3 to EB-2. Make sure you talk with your employer in detail about that. A little bit further down, somebody has a question on a similar situation where they want to convert their EB-3 case to EB-2. Listen to the rest of this recording so you know what the complications of doing that are. In the resume, should I mention my experience gained? Yes, you can use that experience as well. Since it was a paid internship, should I include pay stubs when filing H-1 extension? You shouldn't have to. There is no requirement that you do that. Next question is PK2010. Happy New Year and to you, sir. This is Pratap. He has an undergrad degree in finance and computer information systems, not worked in the finance field, or have worked in the finance field for the last 8 years, and then did a green card based upon the finance background. Now the question is, if another company wants to do an EB-2 for me using my IT background, is that a problem? The answer is no, that is not a problem. And the Department of Labor does consider that to be an independent case, and they should not be connecting it with the current EB-3 filing. Is there any risk? The only risk is if the case is not genuine. Make sure that your case is genuine, that people are not making things up for you. As long as the case is genuine, you should be fine. Okay? Pratap also had a follow-up question. If it is not recommended to go for the second green card filing under EB-2, this is something you should discuss with your lawyers. It depends upon the circumstances and the details of your case. I don't see any problem with it as long as it is done in good faith. I would like to go back to get my MBA. In this case, would I have to switch to F-1 visa, or can I continue to stay on AOS with AP? You can do both, and people have done both. It all depends upon whether your employer continues to have a job open for you or not. So if you go to school using your employment authorization document, you can continue to do that as long as your 485 is still valid. Okay. Next question, Pallavi Atul. Happy and prosperous New Year to you too. An employer had applied for my visa. Visa got approved. Went back to India. While in India, H-1 was approved. Came to USA on H-4 visa. Now, since I'm in a different location, I cannot work for the company. Following doubts. Number one, latest, by when shall I start working? You see, in your case, it is fairly obvious that you never received a change of status to H-1. So, you have an H-1 approval, but no change of status. The question is, when should I start working? Well, technically, if the employer has not given you a job, it is their responsibility to withdraw your H-1. They should have done that by now. If they haven't done it, well, how soon can you join or how soon must you join? There really is no law on this issue. It is a matter of common sense. Okay? An H-1 job must always be for a specific project. And if that project is still available, there is no problem. But if there was no project to begin with, then that H-1 should not have been given or obtained. So to answer your question, when do we have to join? There's no real time limit on it. But common sense says if there's a real project, how are they waiting for you? Okay. So it looks like this H-1 may not be of much benefit to you. Number two, since I have not got this H-1 stamped, are there any chances of getting visa void after getting stamped? I don't understand that question. Is the chances of visa getting void begins after getting stamped? I'm not sure I understand that. But if you were to go get your H-1 visa stamped, and then you entered USA, you must immediately join the employer. Okay? There is a 30-day deadline once you enter USA. You must join the employer. So the fact that you have not gotten your visa stamped, in fact, if you went for a visa stamping, I think you'll have a problem. They will ask you, how come you've been waiting so long? Okay. Why is the employer waiting for you for X number of months? Next, bottom line is, I don't think you should use this H-1. Next question is Con99. Happy New Year to you too. I have worked as a contractor for a Delaware company. This is a question that involves contract. See, contracts are a matter of state law. They are not a matter of federal law like immigration. So you have to talk to a state-based lawyer. If the contract is governed by Delaware law, talk with a Delaware lawyer. Let them guide you about the terms of the contract and what your obligations under the contract are. Also, just as a matter of general observation, just because an agreement is oral does not necessarily mean it is not enforceable. So, talk with the lawyer about this, and I would even suggest that you talk with the end client, and maybe they can resolve this by talking with your employer. End clients usually have a lot more leverage because they are doing business with the employer, and the employer doesn't want to basically mess up the relations. So talk with your end client. They might be able to help you, but you have to otherwise speak with a local lawyer who is admitted to practice law in the state in which the contract is to be performed, or the law of which state this, or talk with, what happens is in the contract sometimes they write down, this contract is governed by the laws of the state of New York. Then you have to talk to a New York lawyer. Okay, so just, figure out who you need to talk with. Talk with that lawyer, discuss your case, but I think it's better to just talk with the end client. Next question, number seven, from US to HYD. Currently a US green card holder, spouse is a US citizen. We are planning to move back to India. In future, and she would like to renounce her green card. That's fine. In future, can I come back to USA as a spouse of US citizen and apply for a green card again? Yes, of course. Absolutely. Absolutely. And also US citizenship? Yeah, of course. I don't anticipate any issues if you come back as the spouse of a U.S. citizen on a new green card. The fact that you had a green card and then you surrendered or renounced it is not a big deal. Next question is Malvika Nambiar, who wants to know, my first I-140 was rejected. There was also a 485 filed along with it. In the meanwhile, she filed another I-140 on a different firm case. It got approved. 485 is still showing as pending. Does that mean it has been tied to the second I-140? No, ma'am. I would be very careful with this situation. What INS or USCIS, as they are known these days, has said is that if your second I-140 is filed before we deny the first I-140 and its appeal, you're okay. But once we have denied the I-140 and the appeal is denied, then that 485 is gone. You have to file a new 485. So make sure that 485 is indeed alive, otherwise you could be wasting a lot of time. Next question is Hussein, 1982, who was on a J-1 because of skills list. He had a home residency requirement, but then the skills list excluded the particular profession that Hussein is in. The question is, university says you shouldn't write any cover letter and bring to INS's attention that you were subject to your home residency requirement, etc. I think you should put this in the cover letter. I always like to err on the side of too much disclosure. I don't think you should try to sweep this under the rug. That, I think, is a bad idea. Next question, Suresh Male. Hi, I'm on EAD since 2007. No H-1B. If I get H-1B now, do I need to get it stamped before I can bring my wife on H-4? Yes. Yes. If you want to convert back to H-1 from EAD /AOS, you have to get a visa stamping for the H-1. Okay? You have no H-1, you have to apply for an H-1, get an H-1, then get visa stamping. I'm about to apply. Next question is AC21 GC Seeker. I'm about to apply for my citizenship. 5 years ago, I got my employment-based green card. My GC was filed from TSC, but was eventually transferred to VSC. I got my physical green card from Vermont. Got another green card from TSC. Nice. So you have two green cards, but with the same A number. You can surrender both green cards during the citizenship application. It's not your fault. I think it's important that you surrender them both. This could cause you a little bit of delay in the citizenship application, but I don't think it's going to be the end of the world. But not surrendering it is not a good idea. Surrender them both. Next question is Sandusri. Hello, Rajiv. Sandarya. That's the name, Sandarya. Thank you for your service. I'd like to get your thoughts on green card processing for my Canada-born child. We are planning to apply for GC under ED1 category. Option 1, file GC for my wife now. The child is outside USA. File GC for my wife now and process GC for my son later. Yes, you can do that. It's no problem at all. File for total family now. You can always file for your child as consular processing simultaneously. It is known as following to join. So you could do a following to join for the child, but there's no need to hold off your and your wife's green card, okay? You can do it separately for him also, so it's no problem. Partha Rao says, I came to USA on a family visa looking for a bridegroom for my daughter. Well, Mr. Rao, the most important thing is, as spouse of a citizen, your wife's husband would have a much quicker turnaround. As spouse of a green card holder, the time periods are going up and down so rapidly. One day it is just 3 months, another day it's 3 years. So the waiting could be too much. Okay? Best option, I think, is eventually to apply for your daughter's citizenship. Remember also that if you file for somebody as a green card holder and later on get citizenship, you can always upgrade the case. So that too is not a problem. Next question, Chandra Perry says, Happy New Year, same to you, Chandra. My I-485 approved in July 2010, received approval notice, have not received my green card. They are saying that you have to pay full fees again. Is there any way to do it without paying the fees? I don't know the answer to that question. My suggestion is contact your congressman's office, see what they suggest. You can also contact the ombudsman office, but do one or the other. See if there is any option. Maybe they can get your green card over to you without having to refile some part of the process. Okay. Next question, SWE82, H1 extension while H4 change of status is pending. Okay, here is the problem. What happens is, when your current H1 has expired and your H1 extension is pending, when your current H1 has expired, I'm a little confused, just one second. I'm eligible to extend my H1. Oh, I see. The H1 6 years got expired. You filed for change of status to H4. Now, labor cert has been pending 365 days, so you can get H1. The question is, can I get an H1 extension while the H4 is pending? The answer is yes and no. You can file it, but unless the H4 is approved, they will not give you an H1 with an I-94. They will give you an H1, but they'll make you go get a visa stamp. The reason is, when your H1 to H4 is pending, you are not in full status. You are in what is called authorized period of stay. So until you come into full status, which happens when you get your H4 approval, until you get to that stage, USCIS is not going to give you your H1. They will give you the H1 approval, but not the change of status or the extension. But go ahead and apply. There is no harm in doing that. Next question. Sabah 303, Happy New Year, you too, Sabah. Is there any legal issue in filing for green card in U.S. and permanent residence in Canada at the same time through family sponsorship? I don't see any reason why you cannot do that. I know that if U.S. authorities find out, they tend to give you a hard time at the border. But frankly, I don't know how they can stop you from doing that. It's your choice if you want to have permanent residence of Canada as well. It should not be any concern of U.S. authorities. As long as you're actually living in USA, nobody should be able to stop you. Next question, if my relative is on 10-year multiple entry visa and she visited number of times after a short interval, her visa extension beyond 6 months was denied on an earlier occasion. This time she was granted visa for 6 months. You want to extend it for 6 more months. What are her chances? Well, even if she gets the extension, this can cause problems for her future visits as well as future approval of another visa once the current visa expires. Consulates and USCIS, CBP as well, don't like people who stay here for lots of time. You know, in other words, they're staying here more than they're staying in their own home country. USCIS takes the position that these people are actually visiting their country and living permanently in USA, it looks like. So yes, it can be a problem. Try to avoid it. Perry Puttar, H1 to H4 change. I'm on H1 status currently. Wife is on H1 status as well. She went to India for stamping. 3 months delay. She came back. In the meantime, she had been terminated. So the question is, should she get an H4 stamping? I think she should try to get an H4 stamping, because the problem is, if the H1 has been revoked, it can be claimed that she is accruing unlawful presence. And if you are in unlawful presence, 180 days will bring you 3-year bar, 1 year will bring you 10-year bar. And you don't know how long it's going to take for them to approve change of status to H4 within USA. So it's better that she step outside and get her H4 stamping done and come back. Next question, ABA Lineni. Abba Lineni says, I'm new to this forum. I've got an H1B approval working as a civil engineer. The question is, civil engineering is also on the technology alert list. Is that going to be a problem? Look, the problem is not so much with technology alert list for civil engineering. The problem is, if you are working at an end client site, consulates are giving you a lot of trouble. So being on TAL, just because a particular technology is listed, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be delayed. Typically, for technology alert list, as I understand it, there has to be some potential application to certain prohibited activities or dangerous activities such as weapons of destruction or weapons-grade technology. Most civil engineers don't work with that kind of technology. That should not be a problem. But the problem really is the general attitude of the consulates in giving H-1 visas. They have become very, very difficult to deal with. Next question is from Sandy. Wishing you a new year of wondrous possibilities, and I wish you the same. Employer, change employer B from A on October 10th. Company B applied for H-1B transfer on October 5th, so which is before the... Okay, till date there's no update. Current I-94 expired on January 1st. Offered, another company C has also filed for a transfer on December 28th, just 5 days before my I-94 expires. Okay, I got it. I want to take up the company whichever gets H-1B approval first. Okay. See, the problem is you have joined company B. If you had just sat at home and not joined any company, company C's approval of H-1 would have made it possible for you to start working right away for company C. But because you started working for company B, now chances are company C's H-1 should not be approved until company B's H-1 is approved. Okay? If you had not started working for B, you could have just sat at home. Then both company B and company C applied for your H-1 before your I-94 expired and before you fell out of status. Therefore, you could have gone with whoever got approval first. Okay? But here you joined company B. And if that is not approved, then you cannot join company C that easily. You may have to go outside USA and get a stamping done. Okay? I think I've got all your questions covered, Sandy. I'm looking at it. If petition B gets denied, then you have to step outside U.S. to get a visa stamping. Chances are that. But again, USCIS may not know that you have joined company B and may approve your case from company C without realizing that you already joined company B. If that happens, well, I'm not sure you need to do anything but to go ahead and start the job with company C. Frankly, that's a very difficult situation to predict how it's going to work out. I really don't know. But the law is, if you've joined company B and company B's case does not get approved, then company C's case gets approved. You have to go outside to get visa stamping. Sai for GC. The 485 denied was reopened after I-140 was approved with employer 2. Given new priority date to my I-45. Now, all my dependents have also moved from NSC to Texas after contacting congressmen. Thanks for your suggestion. I'm glad it worked out. Can I take permanent employment at client place if employer 2 withdraws the I-140? Does that affect my I-45? This question is very, very difficult for me to answer. There are so many variables here. I'm not at all sure that USCIS reopens 485s like that. Assuming your I-140 is approved and 485 has been pending more than 180 days, I'm not sure that 485 is pending. If it is, then getting a similar job anywhere else is fine. And even if the employer revokes the I-140, it does not hurt your AC-21. Son is 17 years old. Can I apply EAD for him? As far as I know, yes, sir. We do it all the time. Next question. Gansu, I'm a GC holding spouse of a U.S. citizen. Okay, so your green card is expiring. My first question is, will I face any type of questions as to why I did not apply earlier? That's not a problem. You're not required to apply for citizenship. My travel plan is in June. If I do not get my citizenship in May, then can I still travel to India on the expiring green card in September? Yes, you can. Yes, you can. No problem at all. Should I go ahead and apply for a renewal of my green card? You don't have to apply for a renewal if you're applying for naturalization. So go ahead and apply for your naturalization, and your green card is expiring in September 2011, you can be back in June 2011, no problem. And then as part of your naturalization, you can give up the green card and you get naturalized. Okay. Next question again from Gansu. There's a section on previous marriages. Both my spouse and I have been married before. How many times have you been married? Does that mean including current marriage? I think so. The way you are describing the question, it looks like the total number of marriages would include the current marriage. So if you've been married once before, the answer would be twice. How many times have you been married to? Tagore, Happy New Year. This is the last question, folks. I have an interview for my I-485 in... Oh, Happy New Year to you too, Tagore. I have an interview for my I-485 in January 2011. What are the documents I need to take? They send you a list of the documents that you need to bring. Other than that, it's very difficult to predict what you need to get. You should talk with your lawyers if there's anything special about your case. I typically send clients in with their entire immigration file. Okay? So really, there is no way I can predict what all you will need. It all depends upon the facts of each case, but you are fairly safe if you bring in your the document list that they send you on the I-485. Okay, I'm going to open the call for questions. Give me 1 second. You can press *6 to talk to me. *6.
Hello.
Hi, Rajiv.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Hi, this is Elmani Naini.
Yes, ma'am.
You just answered my question regarding civil engineer falls under technology alert list.
Yes.
I understand that one, but what do you mean by end client side?
You see, what happens is a lot of people are working for consulting companies.
Huh?
Are you working for a consulting company or do you work in-house for a client?
In-house. Mine is direct employee. We work for city, county, and general.
Yeah, if you are working in-house, you should not have that much of a problem.
Because recently, one of my friends with the same profile, he did master's in civil and job in civil, and he has direct employer. He got stuck there for about 4 weeks now, so I'm a bit worried about my case.
It shouldn't be, but you know, with the consulates these days, I really cannot predict how it will work out, but technology alert list should not be a problem.
Okay.
Okay? But otherwise, your profile is not the kind of profile I would worry about.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, counselors are being extremely unreasonable. It's very difficult for me to predict how it's going to work out for you.
Like, I've been working for this company for the past 2 years. I started working on my OPT, and then I couldn't extend my OPT since my company was not e-verified. So I took another master's. I did CPT, but the problem is second master's was in software engineering. I just took it for the purpose of CPT, and I can continue the employment. So will that be any problem while H1 stamping?
I don't think so, ma'am.
Okay, cool.
Good luck.
Hi, Rajiv.
Hi.
Yeah, just say a name, make up a name and say so I can call on you.
Okay, my name is Perry.
Yes, Perry, go ahead.
I just wrote regarding my wife. She came back on H-1 stamping and they terminated her employment.
Right.
The employment is on, she's a union member, so they don't allow to terminate just like that because they have to give a reason which is valid. In this case, union deemed that the reason is not valid. So it's under contention right now. So.
But wait, here's the problem.
Right.
Lawyer has already revoked the H-1. No matter what the union does,
right.
H-1 cannot be reinstated.
Okay. So essentially she's accumulating illegal time here right now.
Yes, sir.
So is it a 30-day time limit for that also? Earlier you mentioned that if you get a new H-1, if you don't have a job, you should go back within 30 days. Is it better for her to go back within 30 days?
There's no real time limit on this.
Right? I know. I just want to know if there is anything for that also if you get terminated. I know there is nothing, but is there any guesses, I guess?
That the time limit that I mentioned is a part of the Department of Labor regulation,
right,
where an employer has the obligation,
right,
to employ an employee,
right,
coming from outside USA within 30 days of entry or when they present themselves, whichever is earlier.
Okay.
Okay.
So,
that's a different regulation. The regulation that we are dealing with now is the 180-day rule.
Right.
Right now she is deportable. If they catch her, they can deport her. She can't come back for 5 years.
Okay.
But chances of that happening are very, very small. Nonetheless, they exist.
Right.
She should leave as soon as she can.
Right.
It doesn't have to be the next flight home. But
right.
In a reasonable period of time, when she understands that she doesn't have an H-1. See,
right.
She entered innocently, not knowing that her H-1 had been revoked.
Right. She didn't know that.
So therefore, and nobody can claim that she committed any kind of fraud or misrepresentation in entering using that visa.
Right.
I'm not worried
right.
about that part. But I'm definitely worried about her staying here.
Right.
Let her go get her H-4 visa stamp and come back. She can even try going to Canada.
Right.
Because typically, you can't go to a third country if you've been out of status unless
right.
you have a good reason for being out of status. I think she had a good reason.
Right. No, that's why I'm inclined to send her back. The only thing is, there's a small caveat, though. I was on a green card process with priority date of 2005 for DB3, so I had to quickly apply for my H-1 to be reinstated on a premium processing. Now, they issued me another I-94. So, technically, with my petition being approved in I-94 and H-1, so can I put her on H-4 now or no?
There's a couple of problems that I want to mention. I'm full of problems, right?
Right.
Here is the problem. First of all, consulates in India can often insist that you get your H-1 visa stamping first.
Okay.
Second, I have seen them being very sneaky, and I think it's very inappropriate. They actually try to get to the H-1 through the H-4.
Okay.
Send us the following information about the H-1 visa holder.
Right.
The next thing is they are opening your H-1 case through the H-4.
Okay.
So they can delay her a lot. I would strongly recommend trying it from Canada and being prepared to fly to India from there if it doesn't work out.
Okay. All right. That's a good good option. But so applying for change of status is not advisable sitting here because even if change of status gets rejected after 3 months, it will all be counted as illegal time, right?
That's exactly right.
Okay. That's good. Thank you very much, Rajiv.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Pallavi.
Pallavi, go ahead, please.
Yeah, Rajiv, actually, as I had mentioned that I got my H-1 approved.
I remember your question. You got the H-1 approved, then you entered on H-4.
Yeah, exactly, because when I had applied for H-1 also here, I was on H-4, and currently also I have got my H-4 stamp.
Okay.
So I'm really not sure as to whether my H-1 is still valid, until when will it be valid.
What do you mean by valid?
Okay, when I say valid, I have been listening to people saying that, okay, if you have your H-1 stamped and you don't get a job within 90 days, you're out of status.
But in your case, that's not an issue because you never got a change of status to H-1.
Yeah, I have never got, but I have got it approved. So does that mean that I have H-1 and if the moment I get a job, I can go to Canada, get it done H-1 and start my job ASAP?
Yes, but I have told you what the problem is. If
actually, I'm sorry, Rajiv, but I am on CST and I had that confusion. And by the time I joined the call, my answer had already been given.
Okay, you have to go back and listen to what I just said. The problem is, you know, guys, try not to make me repeat because that's a waste of everybody.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, go back and listen to what I have said. And if you still have follow-up questions, just send me an email through the contact us form. Okay.
Okay.
But
Rajiv,
I've already explained the situation in great detail.
Hi,
okay.
Rajiv. Rajiv. Hi.
Yes, sir.
This is Pratap.
Yes,
regarding my question about the EB-3 to EB-2 conversion, where the EB-3 was done as a financial analyst and the EB-2 can be done under the technology field.
Sure.
So if my educational background was in technology, which is like 8 years old, so the question is that because I don't have any hands-on experience on the technology side, could there be a problem in the sense that would the USCIS say that, okay, the previous one was done in the finance field because he had experience and this new one is being done in technology, but he only has educational background but no experience?
Technically, they shouldn't. As a practical matter, they can.
Okay.
Because I am on your side, and even I am beginning to think, well, what is Pratap doing? Does he really have a job, or is somebody doing him a favor?
Right.
Okay? And I don't want you to be in a situation where all these papers are filed under penalty of perjury and they end up being not quite 100% true.
I see. Okay.
Perjury is a felony punishable by up to 5 years in federal prison.
Oh, I see. Okay. That's good to know. Okay, good. And the second part of my question was that if I plan to go for an MBA, and I can, you said that I can do that while I'm on the AOS as long as the job is open with the employer.
That is correct.
Now, my situation is that I'm not with that particular employer anymore. However, I do have employment authorization and I have the advance parole, but I am with another company.
Well, that other company has a job similar to the one that was before?
Yes.
As long as you file an AC-21 and they still hold the job open for you, I don't see any problem.
I see. Okay.
See, Pratap, this is the way I would set it up if I were you.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, if an employer is going to wait for me for 2 years, there has to be some incentive somewhere.
Right.
Ideally, I would want you to work part-time and go to school full-time.
Uh-huh.
Because that way you are maintaining a continuity in your job.
Okay.
Okay, and the employer is making an accommodation for you. If you are totally going to school and they are waiting 2 years for you, it looks very implausible to me.
Uh-huh.
Okay. But if there is indeed genuinely there is an employer who is willing to wait for you, okay, go for it.
But then can I work part time on the AC-21 on
sure.
the AOS
Absolutely.
While going full time to school?
Absolutely, because the plan is to join them full time once you do your MBA.
Right. Okay.
No problem there.
Okay. Because I was under the impression that you can only work full time on the AC-21 or AOS.
The job must be full time. And it must be, you must have the intention of taking it up full time on or upon or before the approval of your green card. Okay? But how long is that going to take? In the meantime, if you're working part time and you're going to school full time, but you have the future intention of joining full time, that's fine.
I see. Okay. Okay, great. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Hello. Hey, Rajiv. Santosh here.
Hello, Santosh. What's the question for you?
The very first one.
Okay.
I think you answered about the paid internship I had during my MBA. So no need to include, you said, the paper, the pay stub which I executed.
No, there is no relevance.
Yes. But what I was wondering is when I also need to give, basically my employer is a very small firm. They have not dealt any cases with such situation wherein I am in now, like F2. Yes, wherein, you know, I'm still pursuing my MBA, kind of completing by next month. So they were a little bit confused about why don't you give me the pay stub of that period when you did, you know, earn some salary as part of CPT. So that's why I was asking. But you said no need to include.
There is no need, no, sir.
And about the resume, should I just say in the updated resume of mine, should I just mention whatever experience I gained for H1 or should I include during my MBA, this internship experience as well, in the updated resume?
I would put on everything just like you would normally in a resume.
Okay. And as I mentioned, since employer is a very small firm with not many people working, they don't hire or allow me to hire any attorney as such. But a quick question for my clarification. When they do this change of status now and file I-129, to bring me back to H1 for the job they have. At that time, they are also going to file I-539, which is change of status for my wife. So there is no change of status file for me, but for my wife, they have to do it separately, I-539, right?
Mr. Singh, I am actually bordering on the verge of improper advice. I would be very hesitant about recommending what forms to file. That's not something I want to talk about. You should hire a lawyer. As honestly, my advice to you is don't mess around with this yourself. Get yourself a lawyer, please.
Okay, that's what I know exactly. That's what I was trying to think because they think that it can be done easily and I am asking some questions this year. Because once it has happened that they forgot to file my wife's H4 extension and I was in trouble. So I'm not trusting them. I'm advising them to hire some lawyer, someone like you or, you know.
Get them to get a lawyer. I am very hesitant to answer all these questions because, like I said, they verge on malpractice. If I start telling you things, half of them are kind of applicable, half of them are untrue. I don't want to get into that situation.
Right. No, I understand. And I will I'm going to talk to the employer. But can I ask a last question while this change of status is going to happen next week on premium processing? Is there any chance that I can get H-1 approval but not the I-94? Some people are saying, hey, be prepared to make a trip to India while you are now moving from F to H. Does that normally happen? What is the rule around that? Why
that only happens if you are out of status, Mr. Singh. You are not out of status.
Oh, okay. Okay. So,
I'm not concerned about that.
Thank you very much. Thanks for all your help.
Good luck.
Hello. Rajiv, this is Suresh here.
Hello, Suresh. What question number are you?
Yeah, I have EAD right now. I'm getting H1 next month.
Sir, what question number are you?
I think it's 10th.
Just one second.
Suresh Malen.
Suresh Malen. Oh, yes, yes. You are on EAD, yes, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, then I'm getting H1 by next month. My question is, can I send her, my wife on H4 visa in India before I get the stamping?
No. Before you get stamping, because the problem is you're not on H-1B. I've already answered this question.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, obviously you're logging in late. Please don't do that, guys. Bottom line is, yes, you have to get stamping first. Listen to the rest of the answer during the earlier part of the call.
They will deny our H-4 if I don't get the stamping?
If you don't get stamping, they will not give you H-4.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Hello. Hello. Yes.
Sandy.
Hi.
Hello. Yes.
Hello. Yes, I have a quick question.
One second. Let me just get everybody who's posted questions first. What is your name, sir?
My name's Norman. I'm calling from Los Angeles, California.
Norman. One second. Folks, anybody else has any questions who's posted?
Yes.
Go
Sandy.
Ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Sandy. My name is Sandy. I do have questions.
Sandy, which question number are you?
19.
Okay, go ahead, please.
I applied my H-1B extension transfer under premium processing. It's been more than 3 months.
Right.
No update is given or premium refund has been given. My NH4 has already been expired. My question is, to get the status update, can I take info pass, USCIS, or it is...
I think you are better off contacting the... Premium section of the H-1 over the telephone. Not you yourself, but the employer or their lawyer.
Oh, okay.
The premium processing center can be approached by email or by phone.
Oh, okay. Sure. And again, I have company C also has applied petition, as I mentioned earlier.
Yes.
If the company B denies, so I understood that as far as our conversation, I cannot transfer to company C. I have to go out of the country.
Exactly.
Okay. If company B gets denied, if I go out of the country at the port of exit, I won't be having valid I-94. Is that means I'm out of status at that point?
You are currently in authorized period of stay. Okay?
Yeah. Okay.
And you will be in authorized period of stay unless B is denied. If B is denied, you're immediately out of status. Because you're working for B, you see.
Yeah, okay.
If I had not started working for B and just stayed at home, then there was no problem. But if B is denied, then you are immediately out of status.
Okay. So going out of the country, I'll plan immediately to go out of the country. So will that impact me to come back again via company C? Because
I don't see why it should be a problem other than the normal problem everybody is having getting visa status.
Okay.
Okay,
thank you, sir.
Good luck, Sandy. Folks, anybody else who's posted a message? Okay, very good. Norman, go ahead, please. Norman from LA, go ahead.
Yes, I'm here, yes. I filed I-130 for my wife when I was a green card holder last year.
All right.
And it got approved. I became a citizen at December last year.
Okay.
I'm prepared to file the I-485 for my wife.
She in USA?
Yes, I am.
No, is she in USA, your wife?
I'm sorry, what?
Is your wife in USA?
Yes, she's here.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I'm trying to file the 485 for my wife.
Yes.
Do I need to, like, make any upgrade for...
Yes, what you do is, the easiest thing is, take your... see, here is the problem. Typically, what we have you do is, we have you make a copy of your naturalization certificate and attach it to the I-130 petition. Okay? But if you look at the naturalization certificate, it says, illegal to copy. Okay? So... a lot of people feel uncomfortable doing it. I have never had a problem doing it. I think it's fine to copy the naturalization certificate for this purpose. But what you can also do is prepare the 485, take the filing fee, take your naturalization certificate, your I-130 approval, make an InfoPass appointment.
I'm sorry?
Make an InfoPass appointment.
Could you repeat that one more time?
Take an InfoPass appointment.
InfoPass appointment.
Yes.
With the local office, right?
InfoPass is a service where you go to the local INS office and you give them the filing that you want to do.
But I haven't filed the 485 yet, so I'm doing the I-45.
That's what I'm saying. Take your 485 application to the local office.
And the next, and the certificate and the I-130 approval letter, right?
I didn't understand that, sir.
Okay, so I'm going to bring the application, my certificate, and the I-130 approval letter to the local office.
Yes, sir. And they should be able to take your filing and upgrade the case.
Oh, okay, great. But my wife, she's here, but she's a foreign student, but her visa expired in last August.
This is a little bit more complicated issue. You said her visa expired, but is she still going to school?
No, she's not going to school at this
time.
Are
you saying she's unlawfully present in USA? Is she illegal in USA?
I'm sorry, what's that?
Is she illegal in USA?
She had the visa, but it expired in August. I think she's not legal anymore.
Okay. So, here's what you need to do. That's no problem. For spouse of a U.S. citizen, even if they are illegal, you can still file 485. No problem. Make sure she does not travel outside USA until she gets the green card.
Oh, okay. How long is it going to take for her to get...
I can't predict that. Anywhere from a few months to a year, maybe.
Okay, so I need to make a appointment. Is there any other way to make the upgrade or...
Yeah, you can. What I do is I just send in the I-130, the 485 with a copy of the naturalization certificate.
To where? To
to the address provided on the 485 where you're supposed to file 485.
Oh, the address on the I-485
yes, sir.
Instruction.
If you are in doubt, just call the INS customer service. They'll tell you what to do.
Oh, okay. So I just file.
Yep.
Okay, just
there are two ways of doing it. One is through the local office, and second is just mailing it in.
Okay. Before I mail the I-485, I don't need to do anything, right?
No, sir.
Okay, great.
That is
a
part
you.
Of the 485 filing. The upgrade happens as a part of the 485.
Okay. I have one more question regarding to my dad. My dad is in my country right now. Because I came to U.S. with my mom, but my mom got divorced with my dad when I was four years old.
Okay.
I want to bring my dad here.
You can apply for him also.
But the thing is, my dad didn't marry my mom. I didn't have the marriage certificate at that time.
The thing is, that gets a little complicated. As long as the DNA testing can be done, that is one way to do it.
DNA test?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. So I filed the I-130 for my dad already. So I just wait for the notice from the INS.
Right.
Or
and you can request that they do DNA testing for your dad and for you.
Could you repeat that one more time?
You can request USCIS for DNA.
Uh-huh. How do we do that? Because my dad is in my home country. I'm here.
What happens is, there are DNA testing services who will do his test there and your test here.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Okay. But I'm not an expert in this. Let me tell you that. Our work is, our work is very heavily focused on business and professional matters. But I know that you have offered DNA testing before and it has always worked.
Okay. I got that. Okay. Great.
All right.
All right. Thank you so much.
Good luck, sir.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, folks. Anybody else have any? Yeah.
Hi, this is Andy from Dallas.
Yes, Andy.
I have not posted the question, but I have a question. Can I ask? Or
yes, you can.
Okay. The quick question I have, I heard that there is, you know, some law passed in the Congress, or it's still in talk regarding the retrogression for the registered nurses.
I am not aware of that? Any movement at all yet. I have not heard of anything. Maybe I'm missing, but I usually read everything that comes out every morning. So far, I don't know of any law about nurses.
Okay, okay. I appreciate it. Thank you.
My pleasure. Anybody else have a question, guys?
Yeah, Rajiv, I have a question. This is Pallavi.
Yes, Pallavi.
Actually, I'll tell you this scene. Currently, my mom is in U.S.,
mm-hmm.
and she is as my brother's dependent. My brother is on L1 here.
Okay.
And unfortunately, our dad passed away last month. So we have got our mom here, and we are just the two siblings she has.
Okay.
So we want to know if there is any possibility of us making my mom as complete dependent of my brother so that she can stay here. Because now she has come on tourist visa, she'll have to go back within 6 months.
Yeah, we have done it. If you go to our notes from our, if you go to our website, you'll see that we have done a couple of cases like this where somebody doesn't have anybody to take care of them in India, then just keep getting their tourist visa extensions as long as you have L1.
Okay, so you suggest that we just keep on doing the extensions and that's it?
Right. That is actually allowed by law.
Okay.
So where you have somebody who's dependent upon you, you being your brother, and you are here on a non-immigrant visa, they have nobody else to go back to, you can keep getting B extensions as long as needed.
Okay, so in that extension reason, we should mention all these details?
Yes, of course. Tell the truth, tell exactly how it is, and you know, let INS know that there's nobody there to take care of her, so you want to keep extending her, so to speak.
Okay. And Rajiv, just one more question. By when will the recording be available on the forum?
Probably by Monday. I don't know if Monica is in the office. Let me check.
Yeah, because I missed my answer and this answer is very important for me.
I'll try to get it done earlier, okay?
Okay, Rajiv, that should be fine.
Alright, good luck.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your
time. My pleasure.
Hi Rajiv, this is Prasad.
Yes, Prasad.
One of the requirements for apply green card in EB2 is after the bachelor, there is a 5 years professional experience is needed, right?
5 years of progressively responsible experience, yes.
The question is, I have the BTEC with 3 years. I mean, I did my diploma and then I did my BTEC. So 3 years of the engineering. Is that valid for apply in EB2?
Well, here is what I understand the situation to be. The situation is that if you have an engineering diploma, even though BTEC is a 4-year degree, they give you 1 year off. Is that the way it is?
Sorry? I completed my 3 years diploma and I entered the directly and second year of the BTEC and I completed 3 years.
That's exactly what I just said. I said if you have a diploma, they give you 1 year off.
Yes, yes.
So even though the degree is 4 years, you get 1 year off. I think it should work.
Okay.
We've had many, many cases in which exactly the same situation was there. As long as you have enough documentation to prove that this is a 4-year degree and you got 1 year off because of the diploma, okay.
And I came to, I 3 years worked on India and then I came to here. I'm currently with my employer from past 3 years onwards. So if I apply with my employer, is these 3 years will count with that 5 years or I need to go to
They will only count if the job for which you have been employed and the job for the green card are more than 50% different.
Okay. And the second question is, recently my H1 has extended a year, and my it will expire on September. I plan to go India on May. So after, if I went to the May and if I went to first stamping, it will be 3 months to go expire my I-797. Is that be a problem, or I need to go at right now with the Canada or Mexico to stamp my visa? What is the best suggestion you like?
I'm a little about your question. You said your current H1 I-797 is expiring in September?
Yes. I mean, recently it was extended. I mean, first H1 is expired and I got a new extension and it is 1 year and that was in expired on September.
Okay.
So I so if I went to the, I'm planning to go India on May. So if I went to the stamping on May, the only 3 months to expire my I-797. So I need a stamping on that. If I, if that time.
Do you have another extension of the H1 or you just have this 3 months?
I have only one.
Okay. Well, this is a complicated situation. First of all, the biggest problem is the stamping can take you forever. I don't recommend going to India at all.
Okay.
Second, if you do go, can they give you H1 for 3 months? Yes, they can. Okay?
Okay.
Number three, is it better to go with 1 more year extension? Yes, it is.
Okay.
So number one, don't go. Number two, you can get 3 months. Number three, better to go with 1 year extra.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
Got it.
Good luck, sir.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Folks, anybody else? Very good. Good talking with all of you. Thank you for being here.